All right, everybody, this is Chase March, and I have Barbara Abercrombie on the phone, author of A Year of Writing Dangerously, 365 Days of Inspiration and Encouragement. How's it going, Barbara?
It's going good. Thanks, Chase. How's it going with you?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I think this is a book that a lot of writers will be able to enjoy. You've broken it down. It's got an entry for every day of the year, basically. And they're little vignettes or advice or things for writers. So how did you go about compiling this?
You know, I got the title first, and I loved the title. And then I didn't know if I was going to do it in month by month or how I was going to do it. And a friend of mine who's a writer who's published a number of books said, oh, you've got to do it day by day, because I'd buy a book that had something day by day. It took me a while to find the voice for it, you know, this is my 14th book, and every book I write, it always is a struggle. You know, how are you going to tell the story? What voice are you going to write it in? And it was just fun because I'm a literary groupie, really. And there's a lot of anecdotes about writers in the book. And so I just sat in my office and read memoir and read biographies of writers. Then I used a lot of my own experiences too as a writer.
That's pretty cool how you're talking about finding voice, because there's an entry in there, number 8, the voice that chirps and chips. And that talks about the negative voices. And I'm sure all writers have this, and even people in their regular lives. And a quote you say, we're so good with negative voices. You idiot. What kind of idea is that? What do you think you are, trying to write a book? And the thought goes on that you can actually, you know, not listen to those voices. And it reminds me of another book that I just read, Maestro's Stick to Your Vision. You might not be familiar with that one, but he's a rapper from Canada here, and he talked about how you could trick your brain every time you have one of those negative thoughts, replace it with a positive thought, and then you're tricking your mind, deleting the negative thoughts by inserting positive thoughts. And he said you don't even have to believe them.
Right.
Just as long as you do that, it becomes a habit, and pretty soon you will start to believe them, and boom, you've tricked your mind.
I think that's really true. You know, I really do. Or you just do the work, and you tell yourself, just do the work. Don't judge yourself. Just do the work, write. And once you get into the writing, that's the way to get that voice to shut up. But I agree. I think everybody has a negative voice on their shoulder that kicks in every once in a while. And the trick is, of course, to shut it up and to replace it with a sweetheart voice who says, just do the work. You know, it's okay. Keep going.
Reminds me of number 11, day 11 in A Year of Writing Dangerously. You don't have to like your own writing. You don't have to be calm and self-assured. In fact, it's better if you're not. It keeps you honest. That's a quote right out of the book from Barbara Abercrombie, and we're talking to her on the phone right now. I think that holds some people back sometimes. Like, they're afraid that, oh, this isn't good enough. But as long as you do the work, then you can actually, you know, try to put that thought aside.
Right. And, you know, it's impossible to judge your own work in the middle of it. Fortunately, I don't know too many people who just love their own work as they do it, because I think they're insufferable, probably. But you're struggling to create something, and it's a work in progress, and it's hard to write. You just can't judge it. So, also in the book, I say, put it away. Don't ever throw it out. Put it away. Come back to it, and you'll find something in it. And I also tell my students, you know, whatever you write is important, because maybe it's not what's going to stay on the page, but by going through what you're writing, you're getting to what you need to write and will write eventually. So
that's very cool. I'm a teacher as well. I'm an elementary school teacher.
What grade do you teach?
Well, I taught primary school. I was supply teaching this last year. Next year, I'm going to be the instrumental music teacher.
Oh, how great. That's really cool.
Yeah. So you teach creative writing at UCLA.
I do, in the extension writer in the writers program, which is part of extension, which I love because I get all ages. I get people from 18 to like 90, or actually I think my oldest student was 87. And it's such a variety of people, and so many of them have started, you know, wanted to be a writer, and they wrote in school, or they tried to write in school, and then whether, you know, just the mechanics of life, they didn't have time to do it, or some teacher told them, you know, something snarky and they got scared and stopped. It's exciting because everybody comes to class with a dream and they're all adults, so they're easier, I think, to teach than children, which I've done also.
Yeah, well, I know I was an English major, so I was dissecting books in my undergrad, and I really wanted to be a writer, but the fact that I was just dissecting these books and going through them and looking at all the minute things and all the imagery and all the symbolism, I thought, it scared me from writing for a while. I was like, I can't do that. There's no way I can do that.
Yeah. I think that's true. I think that's true of a lot of people, too. I think probably I didn't go to college. I went to 1 year of college and I was a drama major. And then I quit and went to New York to become an actress because I realized that I had always wanted to be a writer, but I just thought it would be too hard and that acting seemed much more easy than writing. And I was right. And so it took me a long time. It took me 10 years to go back to it after my first career.
The weird thing is, I found when I started writing, I would just kind of like grow my story, you know, and just kind of organically and let it see where it goes and, and just write kind of without a roadmap. And you talk about that a little bit with your one thing about the headlights analogy that a lot of writers know about, A254.
I love your expression, grow your story, because that's really what happens. I've never heard it expressed that way before. But we do. Stories grow, and you don't know where they're going. And there are some writers who block everything out, and it works for them. I don't know many writers like that, and I don't know where what I'm writing is really going to go. Even this book, I wasn't sure, you know, as I said, of the voice or the tone or just, you know, would it have an arc? I didn't know what I was doing, and I never know what I'm doing when I start a book. But that's why it's exciting to write, because you figure out, you know, you're figuring out what you really think and really believe.
Yeah, it's exploration. It's like we're exploring the unknown, and we're actually coming into things. And I like when you, like, I have an idea and I usually sit on it for a while before I write. So I'll come up with an idea and I'm like, yeah, that's pretty good, and sit on it for a while and not actually write anything. And then it takes a while before that idea kind of cooks in my brain, I guess. And then I feel like I can start writing it. And then when I do start writing it, I'll write something weird and I won't even know why. Some like little detail. And I'm just typing as fast as I can. I like to write fast, get that first draft out there. And then further down the story, I'll be like, whoa, that's why I said that in chapter one. And I'm like in chapter 10, and it just like, I don't know if I'm planning in my head or how that works exactly.
I think we have just a huge well of creativity. Everybody does. And knowledge and experience and feelings. And when we write, we're letting this out. And we don't necessarily know it ahead of time intellectually. As a teacher, I try to get people to, I do a lot of 5-minute writing exercises in my classes because people don't have time to think. If you throw them an idea to write about and say you have 5 minutes to write, you can't stop moving your pen. And they're always astonished at what can come out of them. And they'll say, you know, they'll be reading something they wrote in 5 minutes and they'll start to cry sometimes. Some students have done this and they said, you know, I don't know where this came from. And they're surprising themselves. And I think the surprise element in writing, as you were saying, is wonderful and exciting and happens if people allow it to happen.
I definitely agree. And that's something you can do with every age group. I've done it with primary students and just ask them for a word. And I write the word on the board and I write 4 or 5 of them up there. And then I time it. Okay, we're going to write for 5 minutes. And I actually write with them. Uh-huh. And then we share all our writing afterwards. They can pass if they don't want to read it aloud, but it's always a really good experience. And I think it does, like you say, it unblocks some of that maybe negative thought or, oh, I don't know what to write because, oh, I just got to do it. Who cares? Let's just go start.
Exactly. My next book is called Kicking in the Wall, and it's 365 5-minute writing prompts. And based on that theory, you just do it. And you get, what happens is you get out of your own way when you're doing a 5-minute exercise. And I think if you tell somebody, well, write about, say, let's write about horses, you have 15 minutes, people will start agonizing over what they know about horses or don't know about horses, and they'll start thinking. And the trick, as you know, with the kids, for 5 minutes, they don't have time to think. So they get out of their own way and simply write. And it's very exciting to be in a classroom and see that happen, I think.
It is. It is for sure. Yeah. So talking to Barbara Abercrombie, her book, A Year of Writing Dangerously, and I was reading day number 19 here. It says that you were going to be doing an interview, and standard practice for interviewers is to give them some questions because right. They barely read the book. And I read the book cover to cover and with a pencil in my hand. And I thought, what? And this is the second interview I've done for a book for my blog. And I read both books cover to cover. And I read that and I was like, what? Interviewers don't read the book?
Oh, you are rare and wonderful, Chase. it's much appreciated too.
I love reading and I love writing, and I probably am doing more reading than writing right now, which is a little bit of a shame, but.
But you know, I always tell my students, you know, this is how you learn how to write. And they take out their pencils, like I'm gonna say something really profound. And I say, one, read, two, write. And you have to read. You read, I think writers go through periods where they read more than write, and then you write more, but reading is such an integral part. I don't know why anybody would want to be a writer if they didn't love reading. Do you?
I don't know. Yeah, it's definitely kind of weird. I think some people write for different reasons, I suppose. Some people write just because they have a story. Some people write because they think they're going to get famous, but other people write just because they have good taste and they want good taste in stories. I think I read that somewhere. I've got so many notes here. I don't know if I can.
I did. It was Ira Glass wrote about.
That's right.
I read him. He said that we become writers because we have good taste. And then one of our problems is that our own writing doesn't live up to our good taste. And I thought, I just found that quote recently when I was doing the book, and I love it. I think it's really kind of profound. The better our taste is, sometimes the harder it is to write. And it never really lives up to the writers that you just idolize. But as I say in the book, I think it's so exciting if you love books and you love to write to just be part of literature and trying to write and reading and being part of the community of writers. I think it's a pretty happy life to do that.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you can't be scared of writing because you're like, well, there's no way I can be Stephen King, and there's no way I could be any book that you like really loved, you know? And mm-hmm. I'm also a rapper, and sometimes when rappers first start writing their rhymes, they sound like other rappers.
Uh-huh.
And I find that there's kind of that phase for writers too, because I was a huge Sharon Creech fan, and she's a YA author, and I think my favorite all-time book is her Heartbeat. Heartbeat's an amazing book. And it's a verse novel. And I wrote a verse novel, and it almost felt like I was writing in her voice for a little bit. I know she's not the only one that's ever done a verse novel, but that was kind of interesting, I thought.
That is interesting. I think we all do that. When I went through my Joan Didion phase, I wanted to be Joan Didion and write exactly like her, and kind of got into her voice. And I think that's good. I encourage students to do that, because eventually it becomes your own voice and you're not really copying somebody. And whatever inspires you, if you read Stephen King and get so inspired that you want to write like Stephen King, that'll give you the juice to get going, and eventually your own voice will take over. So I think that we all learn how to write that way, don't you?
I agree. We're talking with Barbara Abercrombie, her book, A Year of Writing Dangerously, 365 Days of Inspiration and Encouragement. Definitely an awesome book for writers to check out. And one of my favorite ones there talked about five characteristics of writing, but that wasn't something that you wanted to do, because the point is, and this is a quote from the book, the point is that there are not cut and dried answers to questions about creative writing. Like, if somebody wants to write, we can't just say, okay, here's how you do it.
No, you can't do that. And I think as a teacher, all I can do is bring in wonderful writing as examples. I always start each class with reading a poem, whether they like poetry or not. And some students just look at me cross-eyed. They think, oh God, you know, what have they gotten into? She's going to stand up there reading poetry. But I love poetry, and I read them one poem at the beginning of each class. And one of the most exciting things I've had as feedback from students is that they've started reading poetry and appreciating it, because I think to write prose, studying poetry is very, very helpful and inspiring. So I don't think there's any cut and dried way to teach writing. It's giving people prompts, introducing the notion that there really are no mistakes in writing. You're writing your way to whatever you have to write. And some people, like you were saying before, don't necessarily want to become writers, they just want to write. And that is wonderful too. I mean, if you have a journal and you just want to write in your journal and keep track of your life, I think everybody should do that. And there's so many other opportunities for people to write, like blogs, you know, whatever your interests are, to create a blog out of your interests and write in that every day or once a week. And then there's also self-publishing, which is amazing, and it has changed so much in the last 10 years, I think, that you can write stories about your family, you can write your autobiography, and you can publish it and for your family. So there's just lots of new opportunities for people who want to write and don't want to become writers.
Yeah, I got to find another quote. Oh, there it is. Dimes and ivory soap. Number 78 there. There's an anecdote about your family finding dimes in the soap mysteriously. We don't need to spoil that story for anyone, but basically, if you don't write down your stories, they're gone.
Exactly.
And that's the point. I think what you were just coming across there is how we can write journals and how we can write these stories. I've been reading up a little bit about Indian residential schools, and a lot of the people that went through that didn't want to talk about it because it was painful. But it's starting to get written down now, and there are some stories out there, and I think that's very important to have those narratives out in the world. So when the elders do pass away, like they are, some of them, that we still have their stories behind them.
Right, and the stories are going. You can have videos, you know, you can have photographs and albums, but if people don't write down the stories, they're gone. I think stories are so valuable and precious, and I encourage everybody to write down their stories, to keep track of their lives, because it's important.
Not only our own lives, in day 306 of the 365 days of writing here, you talk about how we can borrow other people's stories.
Right, the stories you hear. I used to think of it as stealing, but I think it's preserving stories now. And you know what, Chase, it takes energy to do it. It takes energy to keep a journal and to write down the stories. And it also takes the realization of the importance of it, because people tend to think, and we all do this, going through life, our lives become so familiar to us that we think, oh, who would ever be interested in that or that detail? Why is that important? But if you write it stuff down and go back to it even just a year later, it's astonishing. You do realize the value in all those little details of your life.
Yeah, I find writing helps me remember. I don't have such a good memory, but I write things down, and I used to journal a lot more than I do, but my blog has kind of become my journal. And every month I actually look back to what I was writing last month at that time. And it really is an interesting, you know, observation to see, to remember some things that I probably might not have just because I wrote it down and I published it on a blog.
Exactly. I've been keeping my blog, which is writingtime.typepad.com. I think it's like 6.5 years now, and I go back to some of the old posts and I think, golly, I'd forgotten all about that, or, you know, it's like I'm reading it for the first time.
That's very cool. Nothing new under the sun, day 51. There's a Paul Hogan quote. And this is one interesting thing you do in the book too. You have a little anecdote or story or piece of advice, and every day takes up a page in the book. Mm-hmm. And some of them are only a paragraph, and some of them are four or five. But at the end of that, there's a quote from an author or another writer. Mm-hmm. And it's really interesting because I like to watch book television sometimes just to see what the other writers are saying. But I don't often read a lot of writers' quotes. So it's cool to see that you have those in there. And this one in particular, Paul Hogan says, "Everything has been said, but not everything has been said superbly. And even if it had been, everything must be said freshly over and over."
Isn't that wonderful? I love that quote too. And it's just so true. There's nothing new under the sun. It's a paradox because our stories are very similar, but the details of our stories are different and new and fresh. In that section, I was quoting a student who always is emailing me. And in that point, it was about Nora Ephron, who just passed away a couple of weeks ago, and that she wanted to write. She felt that Nora Ephron was stealing her material or had hijacked everything to write about.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can still explore themes that have already been explored. I love comic books. And if you think about it, I mean, Spider-Man has been out since the 60s, and there are literally thousands and thousands and thousands of Spider-Man stories, but they still come out with a brand new one every week.
Isn't that amazing? And a brand new movie and a brand new Broadway play.
So just because something's been said, it shouldn't scare writers away from tackling that subject as well.
Exactly.
For sure. And day 178, the duty of poets and writers. I like this. "The poet's voice need not merely be the record of man. It can be one of the props, the pillars to help him endure and prevail."
Yeah.
And that quote kind of reminds me of Joseph Gold's Read for Your Life, Literature as a Life Support System. Are you familiar with that book?
No, I'm not. I'm going to take a note about it right here. Joseph Gold?
Yeah, it's called Read for Your Life.
Oh, I love that title.
It's great because he uses books in therapy sessions with patients, and they can learn a lot through other people's stories about their own experience. And he believes that stories help us reorganize our thinking and help to resolve problems because we can review situations from a different viewpoint, from a different character, and get more insight into our own lives through that.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you. I'm going to, as soon as we're finished, I'm going to go to Amazon and look up that book. I believe that so strongly.
Yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah.
I think there's the same day 178 of your year of writing dangerously. The quote under there is, "Certainly morality should come first for writers, critics, and everybody else. People who change tires, people in factories, they should always ask, is this moral? Not, will it sell?" And that's from John Gardner.
Gardner, yes, yes. And he was such a moral writer too. Yeah, it's so true. I think, you know, it's interesting at the writer's program at UCLA, because I teach creative writing, and most of my students are really serious about exploring their lives or, you know, putting something important down on the page and very serious about their writing. And the screenwriting classes are very different, I think. And I don't mean to make it mass generalization here, but I think people are thinking more about, you know, breaks and making money and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
I don't mean to put screenwriters down because I know some very serious ones, but.
Yeah, well, I mean, writing novels is a lot different than writing screenplays as well.
Totally, totally.
I mean, I actually write both, so I'm kind of in a weird situation right now. But when I write, I let things develop organically is basically what I do. And I know there are certain screenplay beat sheets and things that you can get saying that this should happen on this page, this should happen on this page.
Right.
And like you said before, some people can write with those kind of plans, but I feel it handcuffing. And I think a good story doesn't necessarily have to have all these different elements. Like you said in the five characteristics of writing, that there aren't any. But I read a book called Story Engineering by Larry Brooks. He's got a blog called Story Fix, and he says that there's six core competencies. And basically he's saying these six things need to be in your story, and that you should block them out, and that you should figure out where they are. And I read it, but I much prefer as a manual for writing Stephen King's.
His memoir book. It's about his writing life and...
It's called On Writing, a memoir of...
On Writing, yes, right. That's a terrific book. I love that.
It certainly is, but I've been wondering a lot lately because I keep reading blog post after blog post and things like this where you should plan out your stuff, because if you don't plan it out, you're going to have to do draft after draft after draft of your writing until you do have these things that should have been in your original plan. It's really, you know, conflicting me right now whether I'm writing wrong.
You can't write wrong, Chase. There's no way to write wrong. I think that you're going to write draft after draft no matter how you start. And I'm always, you know, I'm always reading those books or those blog posts about five things your story must have or 10 elements that you need to sell your story. And I'm always, and they never work for me because I have to sort of get into the story and find that myself. I mean, it's not like baking a cake where you, well, we're going to have, you know, a little of this and a little of that, and you're going to heat the oven to 350 and you're going to sift the flour. I don't know. I think writing is just an incredibly messy process, and you just can't be afraid of the mess to get into it. It's like, here's an example. I have a grandson named Axel, and I have a photograph of him at age 2, and he's painting. He's doing a blue painting that I have hanging in my house right now, and he is covered with blue paint. He has blue paint up his nose and his hair and his fingers and his ears. And he's created this beautiful painting out of the blue paint. I think that's how we write. We've got to get into the blue paint, and eventually we will create something, if that makes sense.
It definitely does. And going back to what we were talking about earlier about being moral with our writing, mm-hmm. these blog posts that are five sure ways to write and 10 mm-hmm. scenes you must have, mm-hmm. those kind of posts sell. And I don't know why, but anything with a number in it.
Oh, yes.
With a number to start, like five ways to.
Oh, that's true. When I do writing articles, I always do that. I always put numbers in and, you know, sort of push everything into the numbers. That's true. But then you take the numbers with a grain of salt.
Yeah. And the other thing that really annoys me, another way that people sell a copy on the internet is, you know, like the Batman guide to writing. And then they are the M&M guide to writing children's books. And they put stuff together that doesn't match at all. And right. then they take some mythology from it. And whoever's searching for that is going to find that. And people will click on it because they think it's weird. But to yeah. me, it doesn't seem honest. And that's one of the reasons I like your book, because you say it's messy. Get in there and do it. And don't be afraid. And you give us all sorts of inspiration. So I think that's morally the better way to go.
Thank you, Chase. That's nice. Thank you.
Yes, we're talking to Barbara Abercrombie, A Year of Writing Dangerously, 365 Days of Inspiration and Encouragement. I am so glad I got this book. So how can people get in touch with you if they want to find out more about you?
I have a website, www.barbaraabercrombie.com. And I have a blog, it's www.writingtime.typepad.com. And they can email me through my website or leave comments on the blog.
Excellent. Are you on Twitter or anything like that?
No, I'm on Facebook though. And the only thing, I don't do anything personal on Facebook, or not too, sometimes I'll do pictures of photographs, but it's really basically saying, you know, I'm going to be at Umpteen Bookstore, come to my reading, or my book is out and all this stuff. So it's to sell my wares.
Awesome. And I hope you sell a lot. This is your 14th book.
Yes.
And it's a great one for all writers out there. And your 15th book is going to be another one writers are probably going to want to pick up. So definitely, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thanks.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking to you, Chase. And by the way, you have the coolest name, Chase March. I love it.
Yeah, well, I can admit it's a pen name. But,
it's a pen name? Oh, it's a wonderful pen name. It's fabulous. Even better.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Chase. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Me as well. Have a good night.
Okay, you too.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Bye.